Today, Mary Vogt tells us her story of speaking up for her child with cystic fibrosis and advocating to end discrimination against people with disabilities. I'm your host, Paul Horrocks, and this is the Biblical Courage Podcast.
The Biblical Courage Podcast is supported by listeners. Visit biblicalcourage.com to learn more or sign up for our newsletter.
So I'm here with Mary Vogt. She's going to tell us her story of having a child with cystic fibrosis and all the pressure she received from members of the medical community to end her daughter's life. Now, if you're not familiar with the history of eugenics in our country, it was a movement by scientists to get rid of undesirable people by effectively breeding them out of the population. It's a sad tale that includes blatant discrimination, forced sterilization, and more recently, abortion. Sadly, it still exists today. If you have certain genes that the medical community finds undesirable, they'll put pressure on you to sterilize yourself, or if you do get pregnant, to end the child's life. Unfortunately, when one form of eugenics loses popularity, another one usually pops up right after that. It's a constant battle to speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. What I love about Mary's story is that she didn't set out to take on this battle. She had a child with cystic fibrosis and saw firsthand the blatant discrimination against people with disabilities. As a result, she became an advocate not just for her own child, but for other people with disabilities as well. Mary is a great example of what Jesus meant in Matthew 25 when he challenged us to take care of the least of these. So Mary, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So before we jump into your story, I want you to tell everyone about the National Council on Disability and what your role is there.
Yeah, so I proudly serve on the National Council on Disability. I was appointed by President Trump, and I'm currently the only female of the 9 council members. And so there, what we do is we advise Congress and the White House on policies that affect the most vulnerable among us. It's a great honor.
Wow, terrific. So I want to jump in. You have a child with cystic fibrosis, and we're going to talk more about that. But first, just tell everyone, what is cystic fibrosis?
Yeah, so cystic fibrosis, which is also sometimes called CF, it's a life-threatening genetic condition. And in basic layman's terms, it's a defect in a gene that basically results in very sticky mucus that builds up in an individual's respiratory system, digestive, and reproductive systems. And so that this means that people with CF, because of that mucus, they're more susceptible to lung infections and complications. And our daughter, her baseline when she's not sick, every day she does 2 breathing treatments and chest physical therapy every day since she was born. And so that those treatments equal about 1 hour a day. And when she's sick, those treatments we do every 4 hours. So that could be up to 6 times a day. And she also takes digestive enzymes to help break down her food properly. Because of the buildup of mucus in her pancreas, her digestive system doesn't work properly, and it prevents her from getting the nutrients she needs from food.
Okay, so there's a lot of maintenance with this condition that you as a parent have to do for the child.
Yes, yes.
And so what is a typical life expectancy of someone with CF?
Mm-hmm. So today her life expectancy is about 44 years old. When she was born, it was much lower, around 38, 39 years old. But there's been some advancements that we've seen, so that expectancy has increased.
So medicine is helping us increase the life expectancy of individuals who have CF.
Absolutely.
And so I want to dig into more of your story. How did you find out that you had the gene that might lead to CF?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we have 2 girls. One is 10 and one is 8. Our 8-year-old is the one that has CF. And when I first became pregnant with our 10-year-old, and I went to the OB for my very first appointment, they do a standard blood test where they confirm the pregnancy. And what I didn't know at that time is that they also test that blood for a whole host of genetic disorders. And so through that test, which we didn't know about, they let us know that I was a carrier of the CF gene. And they said that my husband's chances of also having that gene were very rare because it's a very, very rare disease. There's only about 30,000 people in the United States today that have CF. And so they said there's nothing to worry about. And we tested my husband and we found out that he did, in fact, also have the gene.
Okay. So this is during your first pregnancy.
Yes.
And so your first child ends up not having CF. But what kind of pressure did you receive from the medical community to not have any more children?
Yeah, I don't know if I received pressure to not have more children. It was more of judgment from people in the medical community or non-medical individuals who would make comments like, oh, well, I guess you're only going to have one child, right? Or I guess you're not going to have any more kids. It was more of the comments and just basically they were already deciding what I was doing in my future and not really wanting to hear my perspective on it at all.
Wow. So people were just making choices for you.
Yep.
So you have your first child and now you have to make a decision about whether to have another child, knowing that there is this possibility that the child could have CF. What inspired you to decide, hey, we want to have more children?
Yeah, so I have a very dear friend who conceived a child after I had my first daughter who doesn't have CF. My friend conceived a child who had a very, very rare condition called anisophily. And basically, it's a birth defect where the baby is born without parts of the brain or the skull. And most babies with anisophily are born stillborn. And the few that are born alive, they die almost immediately. And I believe the longest any baby with anisophily has survived is 7 days. And so I really watched my friend withstand the pressures of the medical community when they continually pushed her to abort. And I just watched her in this very unique, beautiful way, love this baby from outside the womb, day in and day out. And that really inspired me to have more kids because I knew my daughter wouldn't have the easiest life, but at the end of the day, she would have life. And so I really just felt as humans, we never really know how long our time is on this planet. And it wasn't my job to bring a child into the world only because I knew that they could have a full life. God determines how long an individual lives. And that decision wasn't mine. And so watching my friend really love that child, even though she knew it had a death sentence, that just inspired me and encouraged me to have our daughter, Porter. Now, my friend, her daughter was born, stillborn. I was with her at the hospital right before she gave birth. And, you know, that was a very painful time for her and still is, but I will never forget the amount of love that that child received in such a short time in her mother's womb, just that unconditional love that she received. And so that really made a marker on my life and it inspired me to have our daughter.
Wow. So her courage was really inspiring. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So you conceive your second child and you did find out that she had CF. And so how did the medical community respond to you once they found this out?
Yeah. So they aggressively felt the need to continually inform me of options when it came to terminating her life. And, you know, as soon as we found out that she had CF, I remember just being carted into this small room with a genetic counselor and tissue boxes were just everywhere. And they just acted so horribly towards her and her diagnosis. And it was hard. And constantly with my OB, every appointment, they just felt the need to inform me like, well, after this timeline, you can no longer terminate the baby. So you have to decide. And just constantly letting me know of that option that was there. I finally just kindly asked them to write on my chart that there was in no way that I was going to abort this child. And I did not want to be asked about it again. So, you know, they didn't after that and they respected my wishes, but it was hard. I knew I was choosing life for her, But just to go into that uncomfortable doctor's appointment, you know, and at some point you have them pretty often where they just continue to push you, both nurses and doctors. It was pretty discouraging and unfortunate.
So this idea that it is a choice of a woman sort of flies in the face of the pressure you're getting from the medical community to make the choice that they think you should make.
Absolutely.
So they're bringing this up repeatedly. What's their justification? I mean, what are they saying to you in terms of why they think you should terminate your pregnancy?
They kept talking about the timeline and when I wouldn't be allowed to do it later, basically assuming that I would not want this child because she was going to be different and not live a normal life, and just letting me know of the complications and her future that was in front of me.
And honestly,
so basically giving her no chance at all.
Yeah, a life expectancy of 40 or 44 years is actually fairly long in the scope of human history, right? It's only a recent development that our life expectancies have gotten so long.
Yeah, and a lot of people that I know that are in their 30s with CF, when they were born, they were told they wouldn't make it out of high school.
Wow.
And they fought on, they did their treatments, they were compliant with their medications, and they're now in their 30s. And so we find often that the medical community is wrong about a lot of these things. I mean, we've heard numerous stories about women that were encouraged to abort because their child would have this horrific disease and then the child's born completely healthy. And so, yeah, they've made a lot of mistakes in the past. And
those people still have their medical licenses for the most part.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
That's a shame of it. They've made a terrible, terrible recommendation, and yet they are able to continue practicing medicine.
Yep.
So when your second child's born, what are some of the complications that she had when she was first born?
Yeah, so she was born 5 weeks early because of a torn intestine. This is a side effect sometimes of CF. So basically because the excess of mucus is in the bowels, it can create a blockage. And so when she was in the womb, she had a blockage and basically it ended up causing a tear in her intestine. And so 5 weeks before she was due, she knew something was wrong and wanted to come out at her own time. And so after she was born, the day she was born, we had to rush her to Children's Hospital in DC, where they performed emergency surgery. And they repaired the intestine for some point, they basically put it on the outside of her body so that the inside could heal before taking it down and replacing it. But she spent 30 days in the NICU, and she wasn't even able to eat the first 2 weeks of her life, which was extremely painful as a mother to watch. Like, she just basically had the liquid that they were putting through her as an IV, but she was not able to eat and get any nutrients. And she was already born pretty small at 6 pounds even. And so, you know, just there with her every day, worrying about her gaining weight. But that's how she came into this world.
And so how did she come through that initial period, those first few months?
Mm-hmm. So she's a little fighter and she prevailed. 3 months after she left the NICU, we were able to take her back in and they repaired the intestine and put it back inside her body. So everything operates normally. And that was another surgery, and that caused her to be in the hospital for another week for her to recover from that. But yeah, she's doing well. She's living a relatively normal life right now. She's very active. She does gymnastics and soccer and tennis, and she loves playing with her friends. So yeah, she had a rough start in the beginning. She's had a few lung infections that caused her to be hospitalized, two of which caused her to have a PICC line, which is an IV that goes directly to your heart, so that we could fight those lung infections and help her recover. But the last 4 or 5 years, she's had no hospital stays and she's been relatively healthy.
And so she's living like a normal kid. What are some of the activities she's involved in?
Yeah, so she loves friends. She says her favorite subject at school is recess.
As it should be.
Because she's very social. She loves Barbies. She loves soccer, gymnastics, digging in the dirt. Much to my chagrin, she collects lots of rocks and bugs and dirt type things that I find on the kitchen counter. But she is a very, very, very happy kid. She loves being around people. She loves making people laugh. She just really is a great young lady. And she's also very, very bright.
And so she's out there, she's playing like a normal kid, she's involved in sports. And so this idea that she's not going to have a normal life is simply just not accurate.
That's exactly right. It's not accurate. And if I wish anyone that was considering abortion or found out that they were carrying a child with CF could just follow us around for a week and could just see her and her jokes and how funny she is and how much joy she just brings all the people that she encounters.
During that initial stage when you were in the hospital, how did your church community come alongside you and support you?
Our church community was absolutely wonderful. People came to our homes to vacuum and clean. They brought us meals. They dropped off groceries. They offered to watch our older daughter, who at the time is just 2 years old. Our pastor personally was very, very, very supportive and wonderful. He actually, his wife had a daughter that was born the exact same day as our daughter, Porter. And so he would come to Children's Hospital and spend time with us in the NICU in our room. He would pray for us, pray for our daughter, encourage us. And it was so heartwarming because I knew at home he had a child the exact same stage of life.
Wow.
And yet he was leaving that child with his wife so he could come and be with us and encourage us. And it is something that honestly, I will never forget, the care that we received from them during just one of the hardest times of our life.
That's amazing. Yeah. So there's been medical treatments that have been developed. We were talking a little bit about that earlier, but what has been developed for people with CF?
So there is a miracle drug called Trikafta. And it has revolutionized the lives of many people living with CF. So in 2019, the Washington Post, they did a story on the top 19 things in 2019. And they weren't medical advancements. It was just really the top 19 things that happened in the world in 2019. And so one of those things they mentioned was Trikafta, because it was that groundbreaking. And it's the first of its kind drug that really works to fix the defect in the gene that causes CF. And so under this drug, we have seen adults with CF who were confined to ICU beds on oxygen tanks who are now running triathlons because of it. And so it has been a huge encouragement to the CF community. And our daughter, Porter, started it last year, actually on the 4th of July, Independence Day. And she's been on it every day since. And we are just so, so grateful that she has access to this drug and that, you know, she didn't have any adverse side effects and that it's just helping her increase her life expectancy.
And so this is something that could have such a major impact that we could see a day in the future where either CF just doesn't exist or the treatments are so good that it has a negligible impact on your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's been some stories that have said that it changes CF from a deadly disease to a manageable disease.
Wow.
And so, yeah, there is a lot of hope in the CF community. And we are just really so grateful for this discovery, for those very innovative, bright scientists in the United States that came up with it, and the pharmaceutical company that really has worked tirelessly to try to find, you know, improvements and therapeutics that help the CF community.
Sometimes we love the pharmaceutical companies. See that?
Yes, sometimes we do.
So I want to talk a little bit more about your work on the National Council of Disability. And, you know, how does the government sometimes discriminate against people with disabilities? Because we know a lot about the government putting certain requirements in to help people with disabilities. You think about sort of ramps on a sidewalk or ramps to get into a building and so forth. But there's other ways in which the government discriminates against people. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So there is a methodology called QALY, Quality Adjusted Life Year. And it's basically used by some state governments, some federal entities, and healthcare providers. And basically, it discriminates against people with disabilities because it values the lives of those with perfect health greater than those that don't have perfect health. And so this methodology is used to deny access to care and access to therapeutics that really would help the sickest among us. And so NCD, they did a bioethics series on the use of QALY in 2019. And right now we're in the process of expanding that work, trying to find out what states are specifically using this methodology and pushing the White House, federal government, and these states to ban the use of it because it discriminates against those with disabilities.
So if I could put that in layman's terms, basically some states and some entities in the federal government are saying, look, your life expectancy is shorter, so you don't get access to this treatment. We're going to give it to someone who we think has a longer life expectancy. So they're effectively making these choices for people in terms of who we think should get care.
Exactly. And it discriminates against people with disabilities, the sickest among us, also the elderly, because their life expectancy is a lot, you know, they're at the end of their life. And so they're not expected to live much longer. And so it's a very dangerous, slippery slope. And oftentimes with health insurance companies, they don't let you know, well, they won't tell you their decision-making matrix, why they came to the conclusion to deny access to care. We've seen in other countries, in Australia particularly, that they've denied the access of Trikafta to people with CF.
Wow.
Basically based on using this QALY methodology. They say, yes, the drug can be effective. Yes, it's good. But basically, it costs too much. And they use that QALY metric to make a determination to say that people with CF can't access that drug. And so at NCD, myself and other disability advocates and other people in the CF community, we've been really fighting against the use of QALY because of the damage that it does for the sickest among us.
So that problem of eugenics is like whack-a-mole. You think you've knocked it out and it just sort of shows up somewhere else. So it's this constant battle of people trying to shove eugenics into our healthcare system.
That's exactly right. It's unfortunate.
So, do you see attitudes changing towards people with disabilities?
I do. I'm hopeful. I believe that the more informed we become as a society, then it helps us expose truth. And the more that we see people using social media and those platforms, it can show that human life has value. You know, we've seen so many moms who were encouraged or told to abort because their child was born different than other children. And they've used their social media platforms to just show their child's life and show the world that they do have value. And so I do think that that has allowed us to see people with disabilities in a different light. And the more that we can do that, the more that we can use those platforms to expose truth, I think the better it is for the disability community.
And I know you've done a lot of writing on this. And at the end, I'm going to ask you to tell people where they can learn more about this. And so we'll get to that in just a minute. But it's great because you're really doing a great job of informing people about a lot of these issues. So I want to ask, when you first had a child with CF, what did you think was going to be the hardest part? And what turned out to be the hardest part?
So I honestly thought the therapeutics and the treatments would be the hardest part. When we were in the hospital and they were just going over the daily treatments and medications and physical therapy, my husband and I just left extremely overwhelmed. I just remember thinking, how are we going to have time for anything else in our lives, caring for our other child, because it was so overwhelming to us. But surprisingly, that hasn't been the hardest part. We just got in a habit of doing what we needed to do for her, and it became a part of our lives. And honestly, we sometimes forget that she has CF. We just do what we know we need to do every day, her treatments, her physical therapy, sanitizing nebulizer parts, medicine, going to the pharmacy, and it's just become a way of life for us. The hardest part, honestly, and the most surprising part was that the advocating that I needed to do for our child, which I was so surprised by, whether it's in with the medical community, health insurance, or just society in general, the fact that I realized very early on that she had no voice and I was her voice. and that I was the only one advocating for her. And so whether that meant telling the doctor, no, I don't want her to go on that medication, or when you put her on an oral steroid, she becomes fussy or she doesn't like it, or no, I want you to do an extra throat culture because I'm her mom and I sense that something's going on. Or whether it's with health insurance, pushing back on them, getting them to cover something that I know they need to cover for her, or just society in general. I know I would have been championed by abortion supporters, honestly praised if I had chosen to end her life. And what about her right and all of that? And so because we live in a society right now that devalues the sickest among us, I believe that it's my job and my role to advocate for her. And so I fight back on that narrative. I push back on the abortion supporters that would have praised me for committing murder. And so that whole advocacy part really surprised me because I didn't think at all that I would be in that position or even need to be in that position. But God placed her in our lives for a reason, and He placed us in that role. And so as often as I can, speak out and speak truth and expose the lies from those that want to end the life of innocent people, I will.
So they ought to be celebrating you now for all the work that you do, but instead they would celebrate you if you made a different choice.
Yeah, exactly.
So what would you say to someone who's pregnant with a child with disabilities, or at least a child who the medical community says has disabilities, and they're considering termination? What would you say to them?
There's probably three things I would focus on. One, I would encourage them to find a person living with that disability and talk to them, either that person or the parent or caregiver of someone providing care for that individual. To this day, I have yet to meet a person living with CF that wishes they weren't alive, that wishes their life was ended. And so I would really encourage that individual to try to find someone living with that disease and get their perspective and talk to them about it. I would also encourage them to look to the Bible and see what God says about His creation, what He says, particularly about children, how He values them, and what He says about human life and how uniquely and fearfully it's made. And then lastly, I'd encourage them to pray. Even if they're not a praying person or they've never prayed before in their life, God is powerful and He can speak to us through prayer. And so I would just encourage them to do so, to just challenge them to pray and speak to God about it and just see what happens, see how He uses that prayer to speak to them and give them an answer in this process.
Oh, that's amazing. So if someone wants to learn more about this issue, where can they go?
Yeah, I've written a lot of things about CF and the issue of life, so they could follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram.
And what is your... Oh, I'm sorry, you're about to tell people. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. At Mary Vogt, V-O-U-G-H-T. They can also go to Wise Intro, wiseintro.co/Mary Vogt, and that has a list of most all of my writings and pieces, or they could just Google and look up Mary Vogt and CF or Mary Vogt and life, and they can see a lot of the pieces that I've written on it.
And I'll put all those things in the show notes so that it's easy for everyone to find them. Well, Mary, thanks so much for coming on and telling your story.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being willing to highlight this important issue.
The Biblical Courage podcast is supported by listeners. You can support us by going to biblicalcourage.com. While you're there, you can also sign up to receive our newsletter. That's biblicalcourage.com. If you liked the podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you didn't like the podcast, I'm going to tell your mom. She loves the podcast.